The Dream Team tapes season 2. Kobe, LeBron, and the Redeem Team is a production of Divergent Podcasts in association with iHeartRadio.
The players selected for the honor of representing the United States in the 2008 Beijing Olympic Games are Kobe Bryant.
I've been looking forward to this for a while, you know, to be in this position now, to be able to, you know, represent our country, man. It's special, it's special.
LeBron James.
We look for the opportunity of rekindling that flame of being the best in the world. I guess the Redeem Team is right.
We the best team in the world. We the best team in the world. We put basketball, American basketball, where it's supposed to be, which is at the top.
Yes, Carmelo Anthony, for weeks now we've heard you say, we're the best team in the world, we're the best team in the world, and now at last, we're going to find out how that happened. The place, Beijing, the year 2008, the teams, the United States Redeem Team versus Spain, the stakes, and Olympic gold medal. Welcome to episode 10 of Kobe, LeBron, and the Redeem Team, which we're calling La Búsqueda para el Oro, the quest for the gold. That came after consultation with my son, Chris, who's a Spanish translator. And wait, let's stand at attention. Okay, sit at attention, co-host Jay Adondi, for a few bars of the Spanish national anthem, Marcha Real. Now, that is one of only four national anthems, incidentally, that has no lyrics. There were no bombs bursting in air. There's no rockets' red glare. And after some international competition, the Spaniards were roundly criticized for not singing their national anthem, when in fact there is nothing to sing. Anyway, two questions, co-host J.A. Adonde. Which language did you study in high school? And more importantly, give us a brief sum up on how we got to this moment, the United States versus Spain in the gold medal game in 2008.
Jack, I studied French in high school, although I did take a little Spanish in college. And growing up in Los Angeles, as I did, you're surrounded by the Spanish language. So you absorb some words, palabras, so to speak. So I'm familiar with Spain. I can get it. I would try to go back and forth and joke with Pau Gasol in Spanish every now and then and sort of make fun of my limited Spanish abilities. But I can absorb it. I get the title of the episode, put it that way.
How did we get here? How were they playing in the Olympics? They've played seven games, including Spain, before. So just give us a little sum up on how it's been going for the U.S. in these Beijing games.
Jack, as you rewatch, the difference in the athletic ability is so stunning. And they'll get a breakaway, and LeBron James or Dwayne Wade or Kobe will just soar through the air. They're so fast, too. And the moments when they're able to exercise and flaunt their athletic ability, there's just nothing else in the world that's close to that. And so they have enough of those moments to really cruise throughout most of the competition. But against Spain, it's a little more limited. And you really see the beauty of basketball in this, and that there's these moments where the USA does have that superior athletic ability, but it takes more than that to win in basketball. And that's the beauty of the game. It does take strategy and skill as well. And Spain, more than any other team throughout the Olympics, pushed United States to rely on all of its skill, and Coach K to rely on strategy, and for them to come together and be more resilient. You know, that they could have been challenged in the semifinal games against Argentina, but Manu Ginobili hurts his ankle and doesn't get to play the rest of the game, and U.S. winds up playing pretty comfortable there. Krzyzewski has defined his team, and you see these roles come into play in the gold medal game too. So as Jason Kidd comes in, pushes the tempo, sets other guys up, isn't looking to shoot at all. Kobe Bryant's looking to shoot plenty. Kobe Bryant's taking three-point shots. Dwayne Wade is amazing and is the leading scorer for this team and has his moments in the gold medal game. So one thing about this game is you can see it, and you can see the best elements, and you can see how indicative this game was of what this team, how it was built and how it played.
Yeah, now Spain, for its part, has had a good, up to this point, has had a good but not a great Olympics. It included 119-82 loss to the United States in an early round game. It was a no contest. 8 U.S. players scored in double figures. LeBron dominated the game with 18 points, 8 assists, and Spain just didn't look like it came to play, which it probably didn't. And here's Craig Miller, USA Basketball's public relations chief, who has been around international ball for decades, on the, well, let's just say the philosophy of some European teams in these preliminary round games.
We had played Spain earlier in preliminary play and beat them pretty badly as well. But, you know, kind of the European teams have a tradition of when they start off these preliminary games and they get behind, they just kind of let up because there's nothing. It doesn't mean that much whether they're the one seed or the two seed to them. They, you know, they're going to have to play well and win their other games.
But you absolutely could not count out Spain for this gold medal game, for the same reason that these international teams, Spain, Argentina, Lithuania, Croatia, sometimes even France, present such formidable opposition, as Redeem Team assistant coach Mike D'Antoni points out.
You have to understand all these guys, Spain, every country, they start playing together when they're like 13 years old. Every summer they're together. And by the time you hit them when they're like 30 years old, they played together for 15 to 20 years. And they knew each other inside and out.
I'm going to push back a little bit on that because Ricky Rubio didn't look like he'd been playing with them for 15 to 20 years because Ricky Rubio looked like he was 15 years old at the time. If you go back and watch that, look at that footage. I mean, he looks like a teenager.
Yeah, he looks like a kid in an 80s sitcom, you know, who's like getting mud all over the floor of his parents' house or something.
Like a ball boy. He'd wandered out onto the court. That doesn't mean he wasn't very effective. And that doesn't mean that the Spanish team, the rest of the guys, didn't have that sort of esprit de corps, to use a French term on a Spanish team. But they had this sense of belonging, this togetherness. And the USA had to sort of manufacture that and jumpstart that. But that was a big part of the reason why Jerry Colangelo, the godfather, wanted that three-year commitment, was that if he couldn't replicate the effect of a team being together for a decade, he could at least have them be together through multiple iterations and have gone through some ups and downs and have the memories. That's why it was good that you had guys like Carmelo and LeBron who'd been on the 2004 team that lost, that had that memory, that had been on the 2006 team that lost in the World Championships and had that memory, that collective experience together. And let's not forget, Jack, a lot of these guys, people like to deride the AAU culture in American basketball. But in this case, it helps that some of these guys had played together for a long time. Maybe they weren't on a national team together like players from Spain or Argentina. But Carmelo, Dwayne Wade, LeBron James, these guys knew each other. They've been playing with each other for a long time. They were familiar with each other. And again, I think all of that comes into play into this game.
No question. And even beyond this sort of this kind of unfactorable team cohesion and being together for a long time, Spain is just damn good. You know, so as we're going to see, we're ready for tip-off. U.S. sends out its usual starting lineup, Kobe and Jay Kidd at guard, LeBron and Carmelo Anthony at forward, Dwight Howard at center, the gunslinger Flash, the man Coach K calls Rocket Man. It's not going to be long before he comes into the game. But Spain, okay, here's who they're sending out, J.A. Juan Carlos Navarro, who had just finished his rookie year with Memphis, although he did go back and play mostly in Spain. Ricky Rubio, the 80s sitcom kid, who is a hell of a point guard, even though he looks a little overmatched in this game. There were also two formidable Spanish League stars in Felipe Reyes and Carlos Jimenez. And off the bench, Rudy Fernandez, who had just averaged 11 points per game with Portland. Jose Calderon, who's in the middle of a long NBA career, and a budding star in Marc Gasol, who's about as rough a dude as the Olympics could offer. And I think I'm forgetting the big one, but the other starter for Spain, he's your guy. Tell him about it, J.A. Tell us about Pau Gasol.
Pau Gasol, the recently minted Lakers. So that's the same year that he joins the Lakers in a trade, comes over from the Memphis Grizzlies, and he and Kobe immediately Bond become a new dynamic duo that goes to the NBA Finals and gets stomped by the Boston Celtics. But clearly, he had turned the Lakers back into a championship contender, along with the presence of Kobe Bryant at his MVP best form. And it's funny, just watching some of the plays in this, it reminds me of Powell in the Laker uniform, in particular as a play in the second half where he posts up and comes to the middle and then turns back and has this lefty hook shot that goes in. He had a great shooting touch. He was a deft passer as well. Really smart guy. It's funny. Kobe used to try to really push him. Remember the famous Black Swan speech that I need Powell to be more of the Black Swan, can't be the White Swan. Sometimes Kobe thought that Powell needed to be a little tougher, and Kobe would do his best to bring that out of him. Phil Jackson once punched Powell Gasol in the chest to try to get him to toughen up a little bit. That was actually one of Phil's last games with the Lakers in a playoff series loss to Dallas. So there was that need to extract a little bit of the toughness from him, but the skill and the intelligence and just a beautiful player to watch play basketball, if you want to use that word to describe it. For a guy that size, a guy that tall, to be so skilled and have such a soft shooting touch was a really unique player. And again, teaming with Kobe Bryant made the Lakers one of the best teams in the league.
Did Kobe call Powell his favorite teammate somewhere along the line, or did I imagine that?
I don't know if he actually specifically said that, but they had a very, very special bond.
Kobe probably doesn't think of any teammate as his favorite, maybe. It's probably somebody on this team. It's probably somebody from the 2008 or 2012 Olympic teams. But so we're all set. You got real NBA, true NBA talent on the floor. And the game, J.A., is highly charged from the beginning. This ain't no preliminary round. And Coach K, interestingly, goes early. I think it's one of those games where people were going to be losing a little bit of their wind. You know, it's so fraught with tension, these gold medal games. So Coach K goes early to a combo of Chris Paul, Deron Williams, Chris Bosh, and Tayshaun Prince. And that really ups their energy a little bit. It kind of looks like a modern team a little bit, you know, the way they played. What did they give them?
Well, for one thing, you get a point guard or point guards in Chris Paul and Deron Williams who can attack. And Jason Kidd, again, he set the tempo. He was looking to set other guys up, but he's not going to be on the attack. And there's a couple moments where Spain actually goes up by 5 points. They go up 19-14. They go up 22-17. And both times, Chris Paul answers. He gets to the basket, and he's got an answer for that. He goes on the attack. And that's not something that you would get from Jason Kidd. So you have that. You have the defensive presence. You have even some offense from Tayshaun Prince. You know, he makes three shots. There's one shot that Tayshaun makes where his arm extends on a layup, and it looks like his arm goes up to the rafters. When you talk about the definitive qualities of Tayshaun Prince, it's those long arms. And you see that come into play in the first half of this game. Competitive, the USA goes up by 13 points at one point, 46-33, after a rugged first quarter. 23 free throws were shot in the first quarter. It's pretty rough and tumble in there. Physical game. You get Wade and Kobe both in for a little while in the second quarter, and that's when they take that big lead. And you think about it, the majesty of having what were clearly at the time the two best shooting guards in the NBA. Kobe Bryant, and it wasn't one and two, it was 1A and 1B. That's how good these two guys were, and that's how good Dwayne Wade had become that soon in his career. And to see both of them on the court at the same time, on the same team, was pretty amazing. And it pushes the USA up to a 46-33 lead, but they can't hold it. And it's down to single digits before halftime.
69-61 at halftime. And then the United States, we had mentioned this before, it's just basketball. I mean, people go, how are they so good? And then they fall asleep. It's basketball. The other team kind of wakes up, and in the third quarter, they come out a little tepid. The play that struck me the most, J.A., was uncharacteristically, somebody just wrenches the ball out of LeBron's hands. I mean, normally that would take like four people. So Spain cuts the lead 75-71 with about 6 minutes left in the third quarter. Now, And Coach K goes all Chicago on their ass. You know, I can't exactly – everybody can look at this game, by the way. Go to YouTube and Google USA versus Spain. As I've said before, we're not allowed to play clips from the game, but it's a fantastic game. And Coach K, I think, says, start playing fucking defense like I know you can. And sure enough, what had happened was Juan Carlos Navarro got loose on a high pick and roll that was played unaggressively by Dwight Howard. But it's one of those coaching explosions. You know, I love coaching explosion stories. You have any from your career? Any you remember?
I've got two. One was John Thompson. It wasn't a verbal explosion in the huddle like that. It was a physical explosion where they're playing a non-conference opponent. They're blowing them out. And one of his players on the court gets a breakaway and does a 360 dunk. And John thinks he's showing up to competition, and he can't wait to get him out of here. And he just goes down the sideline, reaches down, grabs the nearest player he can find. I don't even think he looked to see if it was the right position to replace this player he wanted to get out there. Grabs a kid by the jersey, throws him down to the scorer's table to check in. I'll never forget. Just reaches down, grabs his kid's jersey, throws him to the scorer's table to check in and get this kid out of there. Another great coaching showdown moment involved Phil Jackson actually backing down. The middle of game seven, Western Conference Finals 2002, Lakers at Sacramento, Arco Arena, packed, it's noisy, it's one of the tensest games I've ever covered, and Robert Horry is running down court, and Phil Jackson yells at him for some defensive miscue, and Rob's point was that he was covering up for somebody else's mistake. It wasn't his fault. Phil should be yelling at the other guys. So you see Phil yelling at Rob Horry, and then Rob yells back at him, and then Phil just says, okay. And it's over.
my favorite guy. Did you ever have the pleasure of watching Doug Moe coach the great Denver?
Yeah, I remember watching him coach. Yeah,
Doug was insane, and I loved watching Doug. And Doug would be there before the game. Like, you could be talking to Doug 2 seconds before the game, and he could be making a joke. The minute the game started, and I was there one night. And Wayne Cooper, one of the best guys ever to play, real good-natured and a real good defensive center for Doug. The game starts. Doug's shirt immediately, like, comes out of his pants. He starts going crazy. 10 seconds into the game, 10 seconds, Doug screams, Coop, you're playing with your head in your ass. You know? And Cooper goes, there wasn't even time. There wasn't even time for me to take a defensive position. You know, so I just love – Doug went from 0 to 60 better than anybody. But anyway, so the United States responds to this a little bit, but this is a tough team they're playing. They recovered to lead 91-82 after three periods. So this sort of non-double digit lead, you know, would continue the first period, the second period, and the third period. Spain stayed in a zone most of the game. And it's one of those games, Jay, when they just, you know, you weren't draining jumper after jumper. I mean, that rarely happens in those high-pressure, high-stakes games.
It was a spirited effort by both teams, you know. And Spain, man, they don't get enough credit. You know, they do not get enough credit for how good that team was. I mean, you know, they had 5 or 6 guys, probably 7 or 8. I'm sure I'm missing a couple that had NBA experience. They played in the league, and those guys have been playing together since they were 15, 16 years old, you know, so their effort doesn't get enough credit, because I remember, like, we kept, you know, you make the adjustments in game. Usually we'd have a bit more breathing room, you know, okay. If it was close, be like, okay, 18, we need to close them out. You know, a single possession game coming down to the wire. I don't think any of us expected it. But, you know, in those moments, you just have to do what you're taught, play the game, and stay the course of the game.
And that was Chris Bosh reflecting on his memories of that game. And, yeah, it was tough. And one thing you notice is that it seems like every time the American players try to drive, 2 or 3 Spanish players collapse in a lane, and it's just crowded, and there's bodies bumping, people getting knocked to the ground a lot. Of course, Dwayne Wade going to the ground, that was what he was known for. They even had a commercial like that. So Dwayne Wade's on the ground a lot. All that stuff's going on. And then Spain goes on a run, and they're only down by 2 points. It's 91-89, and then Coach K remembers that moment specifically.
The most pressure moment I've ever had as a coach was the gold medal game with 8 minutes to go, a little bit over it, when Spain had stopped about seven of our fast breaks with that stinking international intentional foul. You know, like when you, they just foul you at half court and they're not held accountable. It's really one of the bad rules of all time. So we should be winning by a lot, but we've not gotten 14, 16 points from that. And obviously they're good. And it feels like all the momentum in the world is there, and all the, that so-called game pressure. It was more than game pressure. It was Olympic gold medal game pressure. And that timeout, we got together and our guys started talking. And we had kind of built that where they could talk. It wasn't just me talking. And I didn't diagram anything. We just talked and we'll be all right. That, you know, Kobe, we got it.
It was around that same moment that Sean Ford, the team's director of operation, he remembers that scene also. And this really struck me that years later, the memory of, for him, of looking at Kobe and Wade is just seared into his brain pan. And here he talks about it.
There's a time, I think it was somewhere around the 8 minute mark, could have been a little bit less than that, in the gold medal game, and Coach K called a timeout. It was like a prize fight, and you just in between rounds. And Kobe and Dwayne sat down next to each other on the bench and just stared across. You know, I think Coach talked to him a little bit, but I don't even think that they were listening. They were just so, I've never seen two people so locked in my life. They just went and sat down, and they were just like, you know, like they were just so focused.
You're listening to Kobe, LeBron, and the Redeem Team. We'll be back after this. Okay, so we don't have time for a play-by-play here, but a couple things stand out, Jay. It's 91-89. U.S. is up by two in the gold medal game. And Kobe, I don't know whether a set play was established, but Kobe breaks the U.S. schneid with a ridiculous, shouldn't have taken it, but I did it, so F you, pump line drive across the lane. And assistant coach Jim Boeheim remembers that moment.
I probably wasn't a big fan of Kobe, maybe, but when we were in trouble, and we were, I don't care what the revisionist history is, but Spain had us in Beijing. We were up. They were coming. They came back. They were 10-12. It's 2 points. And Kobe's got the ball. Nobody wanted the ball, I'm telling you. He went into the lane and he pumped, double pumped almost, and he got it and made it.
Jay, we've alluded to this before, but how many times have you seen some of that ridiculous shot making from Kobe over the years?
So many. And one that stands out, two that stands out from the same game. The last game of the regular season in 2004, they're in Portland, and they need a three to first send it in overtime, and then he's got a chance to win the game with one. And he's being guarded by Ruben Patterson, and there's not a lot of time left. He can't dribble, go around him, and he just gets the ball and somehow wriggles his way free and throws in a three-pointer contested. He made one against Dwayne Wade in Miami. Going across left to right, curls his body like it's a parenthesis, like an opening parenthesis, and throws up this shot, banks it off the glass. And I'll say it again, if there's only 1 second left in a game, I could pick Kobe Bryant. If I get my choice of anyone, I'm taking Kobe, the best bad shot maker of all time. And this one that you just described, Jack, is certainly a bad shot. You're wondering, that's what they get out of a timeout, is Kobe driving through the lane, contested, hanging jumper, not even really squared up to the basket. But guess what? It pays to have the best bad shot maker of all time. That was a bad shot, and he made it.
That's for sure. You know, so now we are in stretch time. And an interesting question arises, J.A. This kind of fascinated me from the beginning. I could have spent 2 hours talking to these guys about that. So you got the number one big shot, bad shot dude on the planet, which you just described. But you also have, in LeBron James, the number one multi-talented distributor in LeBron to make decisions for you. So who are you going to call? And we put that question to a few of our interview subjects. And keep in mind, we have to say that sometimes the answer to who are you going to give it to, Kobe or LeBron, is Dwayne Wade. And it has been throughout this Olympics. But here we framed it as kind of, do you want to give it to Kobe or do you want to give it to LeBron? First, here's J. Kidd.
I've always thought LeBron's always going to make the right play because he can find the open guy. He can make the game so easy. I would lean towards the giving him the ball and letting him decide who's going to make the play. But you can't go wrong because Kobe's coming off. And you know, in that game against Spain, he made some big shots. And that's just who he is. And so to answer your question, you give it to both of them because you can't go wrong. LeBron's going to find the open guy. He makes the game so easy. He's going to draw attention and get two or three guys on him. Then it's up to the guy making the open shot. And so they both in their nature are winners. And so I would say you can't go wrong because, you know, if you get the ball to Kobe, he's going to do something magical with it and find a way to win the game.
And next, Mike D'Antoni.
We all know Kobe. He's not going to be shying away from that moment. So I don't think it was a collective, hey, let's get the ball to Kobe. It was like, hey, I'm doing this. And I think as it goes on, you know, his personality, he's coming at you. And it just – automatically, you know, we always use the phrase, the ball finds energy. At that moment, his energy is off the chain. So I don't think it was consciously, but subconsciously, yeah, you got a killer over here on the left. Let's get the ball right there. I don't think anybody had to say anything.
Chris Bosh's answer was a little more direct.
Kobe and get out the way. You know, I've never, that's my own philosophy. You know, I never want to make the game more complicated than it needs to be. And in that situation, you know, I just feel that that's what he's always done. That's what Kobe does. And, you know, I just get him in a straight up ISO situation and, you know, ask him where he wants it. Count the clock down all the way to, you know, and get the last shot if possible and let him do his thing.
And finally, here's Deron Williams.
There's no disrespect to LeBron, because
of course not.
if Kobe's covered up and there's somebody else there, it's going to LeBron. But as far as just getting a bucket, I mean, besides Jordan, hasn't been anybody better in the game. And that's what he does. Those are the moments he lives for. He's so comfortable with three hands in his face being fouled. I mean, it didn't matter with him. I've seen it up close and personal, you know, put me out of three playoffs in a row.
You know, and that gets back to that bad shot maker with 1 second left. He's just undeterred by that. And what was interesting, though, was that this was a question that was going around at the time. And I'll never forget one NBA source that I used to talk to regularly that year. He tells me the answer to the Kobe LeBron debate, which was in full fury at that time. He said, okay, in crunch time with the gold medal on the line, who did they go to, Kobe or LeBron? And the answer was Kobe. And it wasn't just that hanging shot in the lane that we just described. He comes down and he drives and then he hits Deron Williams, who makes a three-pointer. And then it's Kobe to Dwight Howard for a dunk. So he's just in the middle of everything going on right there. And he wasn't about to let them lose that game.
You know, I was just thinking about this. Yet when, and we're probably going to have we might have a greatest of all time discussion somewhere down the road. Yet we don't put, we do not put Kobe into the greatest player of all time discussion, do we?
He was for a long time. And then it was Kobe versus Jordan for a while. In particular at this time.
But, you know, I don't think one and two, though, do you? Do you think they were – I'm not sure they were one and two ever.
It was for – especially when Kobe was scoring 81 points and doing some things that Jordan never had. It was Kobe or Jordan, and then LeBron entered the chat, so to speak. LeBron had to win a championship first. You can't be in this discussion until you win a championship. And Kobe gets up to 5 championships. You know, right? He's equaled Magic Johnson. He's one behind Michael Jordan and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. You get 5.
Yeah, no, I understand. By the way, I'm sure you've done this in your career. If you want to get into trouble, try that all-time top 50 or all-time 100 list or something like that. I may have to recalibrate a little on Kobe. The last time I did it, I have somebody that if to this day, if he knew where I lived, he would come after my ass because I just had Kobe way too low. But anyway, this is another 2-hour discussion. But with 3:10 left, the U.S. is leading by only 104-99. Now, everybody on the team remembered this moment. Kobe hits a jumper and then puts his finger to his lips as if to quiet the crowd. I'm not the connoisseur of the collector of the first time something happened, but the finger to the lips is a pretty good taunt, about as good as you could do. I guess that's in the annals of taunting J.A., I guess that's an acceptable one, right? It certainly takes some balls.
It seemed a little weird, though, because it wasn't like he was quieting the whole crowd. Because if you watch, the crowd, I think it's mostly locals, and so they don't necessarily have a stake in it, and they're applauding good plays on both sides. You know, there's a USA contingent there. There's a lot of dignitaries there who are making no noise. But there is one angle when you see... when they're shooting free throws at the other end, you look back and you notice that there's a bunch of Spanish fans behind that basket that the USA was shooting at in the second half. And so I think Kobe was directing it specifically to that section. And he told them, you know, and they had their flags and everything, and they were making noise. And he told them to quiet down, you know, time to go to sleep. Little siesta time, right? The game's over. Buenas noches. That, you know, I like the quiet, be quiet. Kobe used to kind of do a Mutombo-like finger wag and say, no, 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 if he'd hit a big shot on the road. Of course, Sam Cassell had the big balls dance. That was a classic. Unfortunately, the NBA banned it. They also banned the throat slash. Remember that?
Yeah,
one?
Oh, yeah.
You know, well, you hit a big shot.
Reggie Miller.
Chris Webber had a great throat
Reggie
slash.
Miller was a throat slash guy, I believe. But I wish there was video for this to you. You skip right over the Sam Cassell big balls dance, because that that is a moment from LA, from NBA history that I will never forget. The only strange thing about Kobe was there was still 3:10 left. I mean, it was you're probably right. It was more assigned shut up to that section of the crowd rather than the game's over, because we got a ways to go, honestly. But on that play, Kobe was also fouled by Rudy Fernandez, who, by the way, is enough of a hot dog that he just had Rudy written on the back of his jersey.
like he's like Ronaldinho or Neymar or something, right? Like...
Exactly. Yeah, one name. So he got fouled by Rudy on the play. It was his 5th foul. I think in that game, Rudy's not as good a player as Pau Gasol, but in that game, he was really good, probably their best player. So, you know, Kobe also made the free throw. So it's a 4-point play. But one final play and note, a huge wing jumper by Dwayne Wade with 2:03 left. Probably that's the killer. And what I have to note in my current, you know, continuous sermonizing about LeBron as a distributor, I watched that play a couple times. LeBron plants himself at the elbow with his back to the basket. He is calling for, he wants the ball. Somehow he knows he's going to get it. Definite point of distribution. He gets the pass. He's triple teamed by, you know, he's forcibly triple teamed. Nope, doesn't bother him. Finds a wide open Wade who finishes with the jump shot and who, by the way, finished with 20 points. Kobe had 20, although the majority of them were in crunch time. And that was the ball game.
Yeah, it was over. And then it was just a matter of counting down the time. And Jack, the elation on the American ball players' faces after it was over and the joy that they felt. They weren't mercenaries. It was something that there was a lot of pressure on them too, and they'd finally delivered. And you see Kobe holding up his USA jersey, you know, thumping his chest basically like that. They're skipping around. They're jumping together at half court. They do a USA chant. It's kind of cool, you know, that's their chant. 1, 2, 3, USA. It was one last moment for America. And Mike Krzyzewski is there. It's kind of cool. He's standing on the sidelines looking at them and applauding them, just applauding their effort. It's a great moment for him. But I like the fact that in that moment, he's locked into them and is happy for them and their accomplishment. And he described his thoughts looking out at that scene.
What a joyous celebration afterwards. You know, it's a moment in time that, you know, some of the greatest players in the history of our game could share together.
You're listening to Kobe, LeBron, and the Redeem Team. Jay and I will be back in a minute. Let's remember, Jay, that this 2008 win was the first of three in a row, a trifecta for the Krzyzewski, I guess we could call it the Krzyzewski administration, which in all three of those Olympics included LeBron, D. Wade, and Carmelo. And assistant coach Jim Boeheim puts this win in Beijing in historical perspective, particularly remembering the World Championship loss to Greece in 2006 and the 2004 Olympics. Here's Boeheim.
I mean, there was a lot riding on winning that Olympics. I mean, if we'd have lost to Spain, I don't even know if we'd have been back. We might have been done for sure. If we lost to Greece and then lost the next year to Spain in the Olympics in the '08, we probably would have been all done.
So, Jay, that puts a wrap on the 2008 Olympics. We're going to be back for a bonus episode or two, but I just have one final thought, and I know you have one too. It's my particular sermon on, to repeat it, on LeBron, moving up to 2012 in London, which we're not going to talk about, but I'm just going to bring this to your attention. LeBron has now won a championship, coming off a championship season. But on that team, here's LeBron again. Kevin Durant averaged, as he should, great scorer, probably without injuries, may have finished as the greatest scorer ever. He averaged 19.5 points per game. Carmelo Anthony, who by then you would think had been kind of reduced to a little bit of a secondary role, is second with 16.3. LeBron James, the champion, definitely the best player in the game at that time, 13.3 points per game, 9 shots per game is all he took, 60% shooting. He got 5.6 rebounds. He got 5.8 assists. That's just the kind of player that LeBron James is, was, and is. You get him on your team, you're going to be a better team because he's going to do everything he can to be that team player. And that's what I take away from these Olympic Games. You?
Looking back on that moment when they received their gold medals and the national anthem, and I was struck by how much less complicated a time that was in 2008. We're a few years away from Trayvon Martin and Ahmaud Arbery and, of course, George Floyd and all these things that have changed the discussion and forced people to think about America. We're 8 years away from Colin Kaepernick kneeling during the anthem and protesting police brutality and not being able to stand at attention for the flag and the anthem of a country that continuously kills black men with no consequences for those who abuse or kill them. And those things all existed in 2008, but they weren't at the forefront of the discussion. It was a much more optimistic time. Think about it, 2008, that's the year that America goes on to elect its first black president. And so this sort of unqualified patriotism by all the players on the team, all of whom were African-American, and they're all holding their hands over their hearts, and Kobe in particular is singing along to the national anthem, and they had put patriotism and representing the country at the center of that team, and here it was, and they were reveling in it at this moment, and you could see the pride that they had in being American, and at that point in time, there just wasn't this cognitive dissonance, this duality, and it just seemed a purer time. We don't think of 2008 as being pure, but compared to today, a moment like that, you could just see them and feel patriotic, and that was cool. And Kobe in particular, seeing him that happy and that giddy, and he'd been an NBA champion before, but now he was an Olympic champion, a gold medalist, something that he hadn't had the opportunity to do before, and now he's one for one. He finally gets his chance. We've gone over some of the reasons why he couldn't or didn't participate in the past, but he gets his chance, and now he has a gold medal around his neck, and he's giddy. He keeps kissing the gold medal. He can't stop smiling. He's pumping his fist. And it was cool for me to see that moment for him. I think of some of the moments at the very, very top of his career. I think of him leaping into Shaq's arms after they win their first championship together in 2000. I think of this moment when he realizes he's about to close in on his first championship without Shaq in 2009. And there's a timeout and he's on his way back to the bench and he just bends over like a ski jumper and he's just pumping his fists like he can feel the moment's already here, almost here. And now this time, after everything he's been through, and he's back on top. He is on top of the world. And he has shared this experience, Jack. And we've chronicled how he sort of got to know his teammates and became a part of the team and bonded with them. And I just want to get back to this Carmelo Anthony sound that we had. We played some of it for you in the very first episode, and we're going to play it in its entirety or more full version of it now. And Carmelo talking about how they were able to bond with Kobe, and he says that was his number one takeaway from that Olympic experience.
See, the one thing I would say, like the vivid memories is just the way that, especially speaking on keeping it on Kobe, like the way that he like bought himself to become so comfortable with us, you know, and the players on the team, and you know, really understanding like, okay, like this is a band of brothers here, like, you know, in the Lakers he was who he was, right? He come in early in the morning, he come in late at night, and he's working and he's doing his thing and he's out with people coming in. It was, you know, he never let nobody in there with him. Like he was very, you know, secretive and standoffish. With us, like you saw him like slowly letting his guard down. Even on the buses, you know, even going to the Olympic Village and going to other sporting events, like you saw the guard coming down. You saw those bricks falling. And he was fully immersed in what we was doing and being there with us. And that was something that was like, okay, he finally like, okay, we got the last brick down. Like we, you know, the wall is down. Like it's down, y'all. Damn, we did a good job. Like it was, you almost felt like a sense of victory seeing him laugh the way that he was laughing and, you know, talking and communicating and stories and just, like we felt that. I think we gave him another edge. Like we gave him another level of sharpness because he knew like how sharp we were on that team, you know, from us getting up early in the morning and training and working out and talking and watching film and, you know, having fun too. But he saw the sharpness that we had on that team, everybody. And what I used to say was iron sharpens iron. And he understood that. He understands that language. And he also understands something that me and him used to always say, lions don't hang with nobody other than lions, right? So when you put it that way to him and you mess with the, you know, the cerebral part of it, he locks in. And I think that's what he was dealing with. Like he knew like he was being sharpened by us and we was being sharpened by him. We understood that. And I think after 08, even the next year when we played those guys in the Western Conference Finals, you just saw the sharpness. Like, you saw the mentality, like, oh, I was missing this gold medal. Like, this is what I was missing. I three-peated, I won, but I never had this. Now I can say I have a gold medal. And I think that's also why he approached it the way that he approached it, because that's what he was missing.
All right, so that's a wrap for Kobe, LeBron, and the Redeem Team, the story of the 2008 gold medal winners. There's a lot. We talked about the organization of the team by Godfather Jerry Colangelo, Mike Krzyzewski bringing them all together, the personalities on this team. And I certainly think about Kobe myself, and I just think about the defiant Kobe, that the story I told you about going to do a story on him about the scoring race and him telling me, oh, it's not a race. What are you talking about, man? He goes for 48 and 50 on that weekend and then just stares at me with this kind of smiling contempt as he walks off the floor and I'm sitting at the press box. So it's been great going through this with you. We hope to have a couple bonus episodes, and I'm Jack McCallum signing off.
And I'm J.A. Adande. Jack, it's been great doing this with you. I always love hearing your stories and your expertise on the history of basketball. And it's been fun to revisit this time and this somewhat overlooked team. And hopefully people have a better understanding of them. I certainly do. And we certainly want to thank all of those who took time to share their memories of this experience with us. It's been a pleasure for us to pass that along to you. Thanks for listening.
The Dream Team Tapes Season 2, Kobe, LeBron, and the Redeem Team, is a production of Diversion Podcasts in association with iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. This season is written and hosted by me, Jack McCallum, and J.A. Adande. Executive producers Scott Waxman and Mark Francis for Diversion Podcasts, and Sean Titone for iHeartRadio. Our editorial director is John Tuttle. Supervising producer Brian Murphy. Legal producer Freddie Overstegen. Editing, mixing, and sound design by Mark Francis. Verna Fields is our technical producer, and our director of marketing and business development is Jacob Bronstein. Diversion Podcast.